Summer is a swimming season for many of us, but what you'll probably notice are vast stretches of corals now lying silent, empty, and bleached. In a few areas, up to 71% of Australia's corals have died. In Western Australia alone, due to the rising global temperatures beneath Ningaloo Reef, this is exactly what you'll witness. Razor's Edge reporter Thomas Cootis caught up with Associate Professor Zoe Richards from the School of Molecular and Life Sciences at Curtin University to find out more.
When corals are stressed, they're really easy to see that stress because they turn white. They have these little cells inside of them that provide energy when they're happy and healthy. And when they start getting stressed, they expel those cells because those cells start to become toxic and they're a risk. So they get rid of those cells. They're called zooxanthellae. They're actually little plant cells, basically. And they get rid of those plant cells. And without them, they start to turn white because they begin to starve because they get a lot of energy from those cells because those cells are photosynthesizing from the sun and creating sugars as byproducts of that photosynthetic pathway. So the coral is living off these sugars during the daytime while the sun's out, and without them, they're not getting this sugar hit that they're adapted to. So they become really ill and they start turning white. So just like us as humans, when we're feeling sick, we get a bit pale. It's just like that. They're turning white. So it's really obvious to see. And when we jumped in at Ningaloo Reef in March earlier this year during the heat wave event, it was a field of white, just white everywhere, all different types of corals, different shapes, different sizes, all feeling the heat really badly and all feeling stressed. And already at that point, some of the corals were beginning to die.
Well, just going on to that, 6 months later, you found that between 52% and 71% of corals had died. How did you compare to your initial predictions?
Yeah, so we go back to the same survey sites and we use the same survey methods. So what we do is a belt transect. So we lie down a transect tape on the bottom of the ocean, on the bottom of the lagoon in this instance, and then I'm surveying within a 1 meter wide belt for a specified distance, which is replicated over and over. Every single coral that I encounter, I'm identifying it and recording its health. So we did that in March during the bleaching, and then we've gone back and resurveyed again in October, 6 months later, as you say, and we've been able to compare who survived and who died.
Can you explain how degree heating weeks are used to measure coral stress, and why Ningaloo's 20 degree heating weeks was very unprecedented?
Right, so the thing with corals, they can handle a little bit of heat, right? Things get warm or cold because corals can also get stressed if it's too cold. They can handle a spike in temperature. So if it got hot for just like a few days, then they can, you know, hang in there and they can recover. Even they might bleach, but they can come back. They can have what's called partial bleaching. So the surface of the colony might be all bleached, but there could be some like healthy tissue underneath in shaded parts of the colony. So what the degree heating weeks is getting at is how long the corals are exposed to this warm water. So they can handle a few days of these really hot conditions, but what they can't handle is weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks of those conditions. And that's what we've seen this year. So the degree heating weeks is just talking about how long the temperature and the water temperature in this case stayed above the mean maximum temperature that they're used to. So the longer it stays hot, the worse it is for the coral. So at 4 degree heating weeks, some corals will begin to start to stress and start to bleach. At 8 degree heating weeks, you might start seeing some corals die. At like 20 degree heating weeks, you're predicting that 80% of the community, 80% of the corals will die off because it's so stressed. That is such a long time to stay hot. So it's like, you know, go and sit in a sauna for weeks and weeks and weeks on end, you're not going to be able to survive it. But you can be in there for, you know, a couple of hours and survive. So it's that sort of thing. So at this heatwave event that we've experienced in Western Australia this year has been absolutely unprecedented. It's broken all the records because of the maximum amount of degree heating weeks we've previously had in Western Australia is around about 12, 16 at the most. This year we've had over 20 at Ningaloo Reef and in parts of the Pilbara, so places north of the Ningaloo Reef, there was up to 36 degree heating weeks. So this is just unprecedented. It's never been this hot for this long ever before.
Well, just going on to resilience and survival, were there any sort of coral species that actually sort of showed resilience and survival? Or were they sort of like weak?
There are some really fascinating to see who succumbed to this event and who survived. So there's one called Echinopora ashmorensis that forms these big tubes. So that recovered. There was some bleaching going on of this coral in March, but they seem to have recovered. There's other ones called Cyphastra, and they form little mounds, little circular domes, and they have really high survivorship. So there are a couple of really hardy corals, and we don't really understand why they survived, but there's a lot that didn't survive, and a lot of the ones that didn't survive were the really important branching corals that form really important habitat for fishes and crustaceans and worms and all these other animals that live in and amongst the reef and contribute to the entire food web of the reef. So all of those ones that are really important habitat formers, they all died back, and they were really, really common and dominant prior to this heatwave event. And this is why there's been such a high level of mortality, because some of those dominant species have all died off.
You mentioned that the ocean is now the hottest it has been globally, and you used Western Australia as an example. How does this trend shape the future of reefs like Ningaloo?
Oh, it's really quite terrifying to actually start thinking about this and projecting into the future, because, you know, each year we're just getting hotter and hotter. All that heat has manifested into this massive bleaching event and huge mortality event, where we've seen a big selective sweep of all those sensitive and vulnerable species have all died back off the reef. So what we need now is some like healthy air, some healthy water where it's normal conditions, so the corals can just settle down and begin to recover. And then in March next year, all going well, those surviving corals will spawn and provide the next juvenile corals that will come in and colonize some of this bare substrate that's now available, and they'll grow up. And they need to grow for about 3 or 4 years before they themselves become reproductive, and then they can start contributing more babies to the reef. So this is what we need. We need like at least 3 or 4 years of non-stressful conditions on the reef for the Ningaloo Reef to be able to recover. And when we start thinking about every year the ocean is just getting hotter and hotter, makes us question whether we will get those 3 or 4 years of non-disturbed conditions. Because if we don't, we're not going to be able to see very much recovery on the reef. Because each year, the young corals, if they are able to come in and settle, they'll probably just die off in the next heatwave event or the next cyclone that comes through. So this is kind of problematic when we start forecasting forward in this, with this background of accelerating climate change and accelerating heatwave conditions on the reefs.
Now, there would have been some local partnerships that were kind of involved in this, such as with the Mindaroo Exmouth Research Laboratory, which you mentioned. How did that play in documenting and understanding the bleaching event?
Yeah, so Minderoo has a fantastic research laboratory in Exmouth, which is a wonderful opportunity to do lots of different types of science based in a regional centre. So there's aquarium systems there, but what we also have access to is boats, and that's what we need to get out there to survey the reef. So the Minderoo Exmouth Research Laboratory help facilitate the access to vessels, and we use a company called Terra Firma Offshore, and had a wonderful skipper, and we were able to get out to all different parts of the reef because it was very, very rough conditions while we were there, very windy, so we weren't able to get out to the reef slopes, but we could visit all through the lagoon. And you know, the Ningaloo Reef is quite a large reef structure, so there's some substantial travel time on the boat just to get to some of these locations. So yes, Minderoo has been a wonderful facilitator, and they also have a combination that we're able to use in Exmouth Gulf in the community there. So it's a wonderful partnership, and we're very, very fortunate to have access to vessels. When I first learned about corals, and I was first diving quite some time ago now, I was fortunate to see corals when they were all alive and healthy, and the vibrancy and the dynamic nature of reefs and all the intricate interactions that go on between the animals and their habitat, and things are nowhere near as vibrant or dynamic as they should be.
Associate Professor Zoe Richards from the School of Molecular and Life Sciences at Curtin University, speaking to Racer's Edge reporter Thomas Kutis there and ending that interview.